Welcome. My name is Bill Munhausen, and I'm your host for The Key, Christian Ideas and Activism, based in Lake of the Ozarks in central Missouri. We talk about diverse topics from a Christian perspective. Our team of local residents includes David Batty, Matt Burns, Stacy Shore, Ike Skelton, and Deanna Walton. God has equipped all of us to speak life into our community, and this program will be a forum for people to share as God builds his kingdom among us. Okay, today I am here with Deanna Walton. Deanna Walton and nobody else. So we're going to talk a little to Deanna about things. Technically, we're starting on a series on education, but we're going to take a little break because I thought it was always a good idea to let people know who the people are that we're interacting with. And since we only have Deanna today, I figured I could interview Deanna. She is smirking over there. Part of the problem of this is I think I kind of know Deanna because she goes to my church and I've known her for a lot of years. So I'm pretty sure you grew up at Lake of the Ozarks.
I did. Yep. Right. I'm a native.
You are a native, and that's a rare thing.
I guess that is anymore.
Yeah. Hmm. Most people who were born here have left already.
That's true. I was going through some old school books at my parents' the other day, and I ran across an old yearbook. And I was looking at the pictures, wondering how many people were still around, and I could only think of a few, you know, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yep. I was one of those people. I was in New York, and I left there. So I just got all of my mail about the high school reunion. For some reason, they think I ought to go back there.
But that might be a fun trip.
I pretty much resisted it. I went once.
What part of New York?
A little place upstate called Red Hook. About 100 miles from New York City. Hudson Valley, right across the Hudson River from Woodstock.
Wow.
So, very pretty place.
That's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. A lot like the Ozarks.
Okay.
Except not as hot and humid.
Nice.
What kinds of things do you love?
Obviously, I love my family. You know, that hopefully would be obvious.
Yes, that would be a good thing.
But yes, I do love my family. But as far as things or what I'm passionate about, number one would be learning. I'm passionate about the Bible. I think my favorite thing is history, not just the Bible alone, but the historical context of it. I'm passionate about serving other people. That's one of my spiritual giftings. I was actually going over some of that again, kind of what my gift mix is, and I don't know if anyone's taken those surveys, but you answer a bunch of questions, and it's always been very consistent with me. Administration is like way at the top. I love organizing things.
Wow.
I do. I'm a nerd for organizing things.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I can sell your contact information to every ministry.
Oh, my goodness.
You're what they need.
I'm what they need. It's me. If I could, you know, duplicate myself, then yeah, that would probably be pretty handy. Mm. Yeah, you throw up an idea for a party or an event, and then I get very excited. I just want to plan it and organize it. That being said, I think that really what's next is service, like serving others, and that's how I do it. Like, I love helping people. I love working alongside someone. I think one of my love languages, it goes to another personality type of test, but one of my love languages is helps, you know, serving with someone. Mm-hmm. So the best relationships that I have are with people that I work with. Mm. I love going on task with someone, planning a project or an event, and then getting involved hands-on with someone and building that relationship that way. I can have long conversations with someone, but to me, it's just more meaningful when you're working on something.
Ah, so, yeah. Okay. Since you love learning, it kind of makes sense that we start with you as far as this whole education series. I thought it would be good to look at what the Bible says about education and learning. I put together some verses here. It says, what does the Bible tell us about education, teaching, and the acquisition of knowledge? Teaching was a central part of Jesus' ministry. So if you think about it, a lot of what he did when he wasn't healing people, he was teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and
true.
They called him rabbi because he was a teacher. It seems very central to God's purpose in giving a scripture that he wanted us to learn about him. So here are some verses. Ecclesiastes 7:12 says, for the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money,
and advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Proverbs 1:7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." Proverbs 16:16, "How much better to get wisdom than gold? To get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver." Proverbs 13:20, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer with them." So obviously the Bible is very much in favor of learning, education, especially gaining wisdom, which is kind of the knowledge of the Lord. But there's a but in all of this, because it also makes a lot of warnings about learning. Well, there's a verse about not letting people take you captive through what they tell you. We have both positives about education and warnings about there's good education and bad education. Is it kind of generally true in all areas? This isn't just Bible ideas. This is actually pretty applicable in all areas.
A lot of that was from Proverbs mm-hmm. or wisdom literature. The Bible has a section of wisdom literature, and it's not necessarily unique in the fact that there's a lot of wisdom literature, and even at that time period, and they're similar, you know, but the fact that those are in the Bible, it was important to God. It's important for us to know what God thinks about wisdom and learning and when it talks about the warnings, I think when God was warning the Israelites to not take on the ways of the pagan nations around them, you know, as they were supposed to stay and walk with God, walk with Yahweh, then learning customs and learning histories and ways of the other nations at that time was dangerous because they could fall away into idol worship. You know, at that time period, it was more in your face, more prevalent to enter into spiritual practices that would be detrimental to yourself and to your nation.
Yeah, you kind of spurred something in me just there. Because I have another verse that I wrote down from Deuteronomy. It says, "These words I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise." So the idea of that is we were in a earlier age. We would be with our kids during the day. Mm-hmm. And just in the course of living, there'd be little life lessons along the way. And we could share with our kids, and we could educate them in the things of the Lord, even through common things that we were doing. Mm-hmm. But in the modern world, kids go off to school, and somebody else teaches them. And it's just kind of like the same problem the Israelites had of mingling with other nations, mm-hmm. other worldviews. We send our kids off to experience a whole other worldview, and often to get indoctrinated in that worldview without even that being the main intent.
You mentioned worldview, and I want to come back around to that, absolutely, because that, I think, is something we have lost, maybe as a culture, a society, and teaching worldview. But as far as that verse that you just read in Deuteronomy, honestly, that if I could pick a life verse, that would be my life verse. And I can't say that I am doing 100% at it, but that is my focus. And me personally, I do homeschool my children, mm-hmm. and I live by that because I wanted to make sure that I was present in their lives, teaching them in those daily moments the foundation, the proper worldview, mm-hmm. and I'm not homeschooling them to shelter them necessarily right. from the dangers of the world, from the pitfalls, from all of the information, but I'm homeschooling them so that I can give them the proper foundation and they're exposed to different ideas, you know, as they grow older. They're very young right now, mm-hmm. you know, 4 and 8. So we're not obviously exposing them to everything, but they know that there's good and evil. They know that, you know, bad things happen to people, and they know that there's different ideas, and they know about people worshiping other gods. But I'm able to walk them through that, and then they ask tough questions. Of course, my 4-year-old, he's not so much, but when Corwin was even 6 and 7, asked some of the toughest questions about God, you know, and I would message my husband and say, "Why does it always come to me? Why does he ask when you're at work?" You know, and he's like, "Oh, I was just praying that he would ask some questions or be curious." I'm like, "Pray when you're around." That's really important to me. That's a value that I have, and so we walk that out. But I recognize not everyone can do that. The way things are financially in our economy, not everyone can stay at home. And even I work part-time as well. And so I do also have to work. Fortunately, I've just been blessed enough to arrange that to where I'm still with my kids.
Right.
And that's a rare thing. So I wish I could give good answers to parents who have to work or their kids are in the school system. And I feel like we're really fortunate in our particular area because as of right now, our school system is good. You know, there are things that are creeping in. There are things that Stacy, you know, has been warning us about and in mm-hmm. a direction that it could go. But up until now, there's a lot of teachers there who are Christians. The problem that's creeping in is their hands are getting tied more and more to where they have to implement exactly what the state tells them and there's no wiggle room.
You got me on a couple of things there. First of all, I am kind of the older generation. When I was young and my children were very young, homeschooling wasn't even a thing. It wasn't on the radar anywhere. We didn't really think about homeschooling. It's gotten to be very trendy and prominent now.
Mm-hmm.
But 30 years ago, my kids went to public school, and so what I did and what parents could do now is kind of debrief them when they come home. I used to help my kids with homework, so I had a chance to review what they were taught in class mm-hmm. and correct it.
Right.
You know, and you had to be very careful in doing that because you had to correct it, tell them the proper way to think about it, but still explain to them that in order to get the grade, they have to give that answer.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a delicate balance when you're absolutely. Public school parents.
Yeah.
Because you want to speak into your kids' lives, but you don't want to cross them up.
Right. You have to teach them some respect and honor for the office that their teachers hold.
And fear.
Right. A little bit of fear. Yeah. It's really tough walking that line, you know, realizing to get where I want to go in our culture, I have to go through these steps, you know, academically. But I also can't compromise. And at a certain point, I guess they come to the point of accountability and they have to make those decisions on their own. And that is the scary thing for a parent. I think that's what's scary about sending your kids to public school.
Yeah.
Is trusting that what you are able to instill in them at a young age will become their morals, will become their foundation mm-hmm. for making choices later on.
Right. Which, of course, both of our examples are even yet way different from when I was a child because my parents didn't help me with school at all. Mm-hmm. They weren't involved even in a little bit.
Really?
And my guidance counselors in school were hardly guiding. So you were kind of thrown into school and you were kind of on your own. But it was a much safer environment because they were just teaching the facts. Mm-hmm. They were teaching addition. They were teaching real history as it actually happened and was written down and recorded.
Yeah.
So there weren't any agendas there. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't as much need for oversight. But it also left me as a child feeling kind of abandoned in it.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, it was a very different time.
Yeah.
My parents didn't come to all my ball games.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they came to any of them.
So is it a time period where economically they were just more focused on, they had to be focused on work or?
No, I think they just didn't live their lives through their children.
Okay.
It wasn't part of the culture.
Mm-hmm. And it very much is today.
It is.
That's very true.
I mean, when I was in California, it was even more extreme because all of my friends were running from soccer games to softball games to baseball games to football games. And it was just like an endless cycle of your kids' activities.
Mm-hmm.
And it is good that we care for our kids and we want them to do all of these things, but it was a little perplexing at times to see grown adults not have a life of their own.
Hmm. That's an interesting thing to think about. It would be interesting to explore that, the psychology behind that. And, you know, is it overwhelming our kids to allow them so much control and so much activity?
And maybe giving them a wrong message because they're never going to be as great as they are when they're kids. As far as in those sports, for example,
mm-hmm.
most of them are going to be kind of mediocre by the time they get out of high school. And I don't know, I think you're setting up your kids for thinking they're much better than they are.
Better than they are. I do try to give my kids a lot of confidence.
The other thing that you mentioned is the school. I think we're overconfident about our school. I don't think it's nearly as wholesome as people think.
Well, I think comparatively, I mean, I comparatively across the nation, if you're looking at liberal cities and the things that they're facing, I still feel that here in central Missouri is better than a lot of the the more urban or schools in say the coasts or the liberal areas or bigger cities. Yeah. There's still a smaller town feel. I have nephews, I have a niece in the school system, and they're doing really well, but they have family very much involved with them. You know, the school system, no matter whether it's good or bad, a lot of the problem comes from there are parents who aren't involved at all with their kids' lives, who mm-hmm. don't care at all. And I don't know if it's so much as a problem of the school system, but also the breakdown of the family or the combination. I think there's a huge combination of the breakdown of the family and then the school system trying to come in as savior, in a sense. The government tries to come in, the state tries to come in and pick up what the family should be responsible for.
Sure.
So I think there's a dynamic that goes both ways.
I think what I see in our school district is probably not even understandable to most people, but there is a tremendous emphasis on money and the material things, AstroTurf football fields or, you know, whatever they do. And, oh, if you go to their, drama department, the equipment they have. When I was a kid, school was much more fundamental. I mean, we didn't have Chromebooks and laptops and tablets and all of those kind of things. We didn't have the smart boards and all of that stuff. We had old-fashioned blackboards, and we had to erase them by hand.
Yeah.
And then at some point they came up with these whiteboards that used the erasable ink. That was the mm-hmm. a great technological advancement.
Right. But fancy.
We did a lot of things with not a lot of resources.
Right.
We didn't have colorful posters all over the walls. They were just plain brick walls. And I know it sounds kind of silly, but it was just fundamental education. And I think now sometimes the fundamental education gets lost in all the glitz. I don't even know if people nowadays can relate to that. But I go into school, and to me it's always culture shock when I go there, when I see all the technology they have and all the crazy posters, and they post posters in the hallways. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is like graffiti in the subway in New York City. I know it's done with the right purpose, but it just is just strange to me.
Yeah, overwhelming and too much messaging.
It must be overwhelming to kids,
imagery.
I would think.
It could be. I know that there's been studies, about the stimulation, like too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get that with babies. You know, if they're overstimulated, then they're going to be cranky. You know, they're not going to sleep well. They're going to cry and fuss. You know, I mean, there's behavioral problems due to overstimulation. And we do have an epidemic of, you know, ADHD, behavioral problems, learning disabilities. There's a lot of that happens, and it's likely that there's just way too much stimulation. You've got videos on every screen. You've got music in your ear constantly, and you've got visuals everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I think that could be a definitely a negative side to that.
About a week ago, I hurt my knee. I was doing yard work, and so I haven't been able to play tennis or do any of the fun stuff that I do. And so I've kind of got hooked on YouTube videos.
It's addicting.
It is very addicting. Even some of the good stuff, supposedly good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like information overload after a while.
Right.
And it does get to be like it's much easier to do this than to do something else.
It's true. You feel like you're learning. You get a little bit of a hit every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're...
So
I've been there.
Right.
Yes. I think we all have. And it's like you get sucked down the rabbit hole, really, because the algorithms are designed to give you another suggestion that you would like.
That is true also.
This one, you'll like this one, you'll like this one, and you just keep going.
I was talking to Stacy Shore earlier by phone because she couldn't be here today, and she was talking about some of the learning techniques that are happening in school, adaptive learning one of the things she was talking about, I'm going to probably butcher this explanation, but kids are taking tests now digitally using their Chromebooks, because everybody gets a Chromebook now, and neither the parents nor the teachers know the content of the text because it's off in the cloud somewhere. And she even said some of the tests are copyrighted by whoever supplies them, so they don't want you to see what the tests contain.
That seems a little strange.
Isn't that strange? So kids are filling out answers, and these answers are being recorded electronically,
mm-hmm.
and nobody really can guarantee what happens to that. Are your kids being evaluated based on their answers? Are they being judged according to whether they're conservative or liberal? Or mm-hmm. is that going into some Google think tank somewhere
yeah.
where they're planning
being analyzed?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a very disconcerting thing. But at the same time, as one of those guys who was kind of early in on the technology industry, I don't know what you could possibly do about it. Mm-hmm. Because when you interact on the internet, every keystroke is recordable in some sense. Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, you've probably experienced this where you shop for something, and then all of a sudden it shows up on your Facebook feed.
Right, yeah. You think of something because
yeah.
it somehow reads your mind now, I'm pretty sure. I've thought something, and then it just pops up.
Yeah. So we live in a society where information is going to be used. It's going to be used for people to make
right.
money and for it to influence elections and do
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. And
I think being diligent, and I don't have a good answer, but I think the best that we can do is be diligent about keeping the nefarious intentions away. Voting the correct way, voting for conservative values or for less governmental control, because I don't see the technology going away. And I also see tons of benefits. There are so many good things that
right.
can be done with the technology in the right hands. And so I think that we have to be really, really diligent and really aware of the potential of the technology, and then keep it out of the hands of the people who could use it for harm. And I don't know how to do that.
Right.
Like, I have no idea.
It's going to go to, you know, it's a lot of that information is going to these big tech companies who have worldviews and values way different from ours.
Right. And that leads us back to the whole worldview thing.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and that also goes back to adaptive learning, because some of these tests are designed that if the kids don't give the answer that the questioner wants.
Hmm.
They keep on rewording the question till they get the answer.
Until they get you to think the way that they want you to think.
And that very possibly goes into an analysis somewhere of what do 5-year-olds in America believe, which then gets posted to the internet and makes everybody think that the next generation is going south.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which there's good evidence to the contrary, that the next generation is actually way more conservative
mm-hmm.
and they're coming up and they're going to make a big difference,
right.
you know, in the direction America is going.
Yeah,
I'm going to go back a little bit because I don't remember exactly what we mentioned. Well, okay, so when we talked about parents being able to focus more on their children,
mm-hmm.
you know, being able to center their lives around the activities of their kids, and that seems like a luxury afforded to our generation that hasn't been part of previous generations due to, like, coming out of, say, the Depression on up into, like, the 50s, 60s, mainly to the 80s. I would say the big change probably came in the 80s when parents were able to switch and focus more.
That's about when it happened to me.
On the kids' activity. Yeah, that's when I was born. I was born in the 80s. I'm a millennial.
Yeah, but I don't know why. My father was not a poor man. But that generation was disinterested. Not disinterested in kids, but disinterested in the sports and everything. Maybe it's the kind of aggrandizement of athletics that's
I think the change. That definitely plays a role in it. Like, as maybe media and entertainment shifted to idealizing sports heroes,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, that definitely made a shift in that mindset. But kind of what I was getting at is, as prosperity came, yeah, there's been, you know, ups and downs in the economy, but prosperity has gradually grown and increased.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that comes more time. And at the same time that prosperity increases, technology that makes our lives easier has also increased. And so a lot of that affords a lot of Americans the luxury of indulging their kids in activities. You have the extra money, you have the extra time, it's an ease of doing those things. And I think that's part of it, is the fact that life is easier than it was coming out of the Great Depression up through those years. And then prior to that, life was still really, really difficult. I just think life is really easy today. As many things that we see that's going wrong, like in worldview and all this stuff, we just have to admit that our lives are pretty easy for a lot of Americans. I'm not saying for everyone, but I mean, I probably in middle Missouri, you know, I have a comfortable life, but I'm definitely not high class, middle class, you know, whatever. I'm not very high up in class across the nation if you were to average everything
out. Wealth-wise, you just don't have to make a lot of money around
here.
Right,
you don't have to make a lot of money. So we're very comfortable, and I think that that maybe affords us a little more time to dote on our children.
Well, where it kind of goes back to that Deuteronomy verse about, you know, as you're being with your kids and teaching them. When I went through that phase of running around to the kids' softball games and stuff, I guess I don't feel badly about my experience, but I would think a lot of parents would think in retrospect, looking back, they would have rather have taught them something more valuable than how to hit a softball, you know, something more eternal.
Right. Yeah. If you're missing out on those things, and that just might be a breakdown too of, or teaching families that it's their responsibilities to teach that in the home. And I think that comes across maybe the church as a whole or religious organizations have also taken on that role as parents, and parents think, okay, I can just send my kids to church and that's the Sunday school teachers and the preachers will take care of that and I don't have to. Right. And the same thing with education, our public school system. Parents, it's easy to send your kid to school and then they take care of the education. Churches take care of their spiritual education. I'm off the hook. I got all this time to go and take them to sports.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's such an broad dynamic that
there
goes into
that. There is a
big
need for churches to teach parents how to be better parents.
Yeah, that has been, now if you asked me what I love, that's probably one of my passions now that's growing inside of me is bringing the family back to the center. Mm-hmm. You know, not fragmenting the family where we have, and not that it's bad to have children's church, youth group, all these things, but definitely bringing back the family as a whole to the center and making, you know, the parents the priest and king of the home and the ones who teach it. And then from there, that unit goes and you gather with other families, and that's where you get your corporate gathering. And so I would say that there needs to be a revival in family stability and teaching that in our churches again.
Right. How do you get that to happen?
I think little by little, incremental. Whenever I'm pressing into the word or I feel like I'm getting a revelation from the Lord or I'm feeling led in a certain direction, I will talk about those things with the people that I'm around. If I have any influence at all, I'll be sharing this.
You're planting seeds.
Yes, planting seeds, exactly. And as I learn and grow, then I will share that with somebody else and plant the seeds and then even take steps to implement it. Like, hey, let's do an event that focuses. And, you know, I'm very fortunate. I have friends that I serve with in our church and they're very passionate about the family unit, you know. And so we can come together and plan an event in the church that is focused on bringing families together and not just one, you know, one group. So yeah, seed planting, I think, you know, is how I'm going about it. And now I guess we're talking about it. That's a good thing.
We planted a seed.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So another thing we've talked about in the past is entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
You're kind of not in that so much anymore.
Well, I don't know that it would ever fully leave me.
Yeah, you always want to make a little money.
Right, yeah. I'll always want to. And like ideas, you know, I come up with ideas all the time. And they usually plague me in the middle of the night when I'm trying to sleep. It's very annoying that something will pop into my brain and I want to chase it down. But on Sawyer, as we're talking about this, my son is in soccer. He's 4 years old, and so he has started a league. But I will.
I've seen the four-year-old soccer.
Yes,
it's like this little swarm of people moving this way, moving that way,
and then kicking the ball into the wrong goal.
Kicking each other.
Go the other way. But we, you know, in efforts to create balance in our family lives, we did skip the spring season. You know, I felt that pressure, you know, because you feel this pressure as a parent, and that's probably because there's all this parenting stuff in the media, and it's always in your face as to like how to be a better parent. You do feel this pressure from outside that if you aren't doing those things for your kids, then you're not being a good parent. And I think that actually now that I bring that up, I think that has a lot to do with the activities is the pressure, the outside source of like wanting to feel and know that you're that good parent and striving.
I guess I have to admit this. I always was bugging my daughter Rebecca to get her boys into some kind of sport.
See?
What do you mean, yeah. Dylan isn't playing baseball this year?
Yeah, baseball's good for them. And there are so many good, valuable things that mm-hmm. they can learn from being on a team, from trying and failing, and from doing it again and again, you know, and uh-huh. getting better. And those things create so much moral development and a lot of growth in kids.
Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be something that you have to jump from thing to thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that pressure to do all of it.
Now, my other daughter, Gretchen, she is a jump from thing to thing person.
Yeah.
Because she's an educator. Mm-hmm. She actually is a homeschool mom.
Yeah.
So I think homeschool moms can be a little obsessive about experiences, having experiences for the kids. It's not a bad thing, like playing all the sports, but getting them into a drama class and mm-hmm. a musical and performance kind of class and learning things that are life skills.
Right.
So there is a little self-imposed pressure for a homeschool mom because you're trying to be more.
You are, yes.
You're trying to do better than the government school.
Yes, that is a very real thing. And then along with that comes a ton of shame and guilt if you feel like you're failing.
Sure.
That's a very real thing for moms. And even if you're not a homeschool mom, just as a mom in general, I think that again, access to so much media allows us to feel way more shame and guilt when we don't measure up to those perfect pictures, those perfect plans, those, you know, it's overwhelming.
So do you think guys are plagued by that?
I don't know. Are you? Are you plagued by that?
No, not much.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, I don't think my husband really, you know, he thinks about things differently and sometimes mm-hmm. way more clear-headed, you know, than me. I get very jumbled sometimes because I'm consuming so much information.
And you're also the one who is day-to-day driving it.
Yes.
Because you're the one who's home more.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But thank goodness, you know, that we're getting into a better balance, you know, and that's just, life is hard. And you have to be intentional.
You just got done telling me how easy it is.
No. Like relationships and life. Like as far as, I mean.
Surviving is easy.
Surviving is easier. But thriving, like emotionally in relationships, like being in a marriage, being in a family unit, those things, it takes work. You have to be intentional mm-hmm. about being a team and being a family. And, you know, or you drift apart or, you know, you have issues and. Yeah, I think, so going back to the entrepreneurial thing, that actually ties in together for me. So yes, I was very passionate about, you know, entrepreneurship and chasing ideas and being able to make money with that and be successful. And now I know that, you know, I have small children and I needed to make sure that they were my first priority. That my marriage was my first priority and that my kids were my first priority. I got unbalanced for a little while. Yeah. And it's hard to admit that. I got to the point where I had to make a decision. Do I pursue this path that's going to take me more away from my family more and more? I had a little bit of success and that was exciting, you know, but my family was just in a really tough spot. My relationship with my husband was struggling in communication, and I had to make that decision that, no, that's not my priority to mm-hmm. be the breadwinner. You know, that's not that it's just my husband's job, but he is the husband, you know, and he wanted to make sure he was providing.
And it's like you said, sometimes we strive for things we don't need because mm-hmm. it's pretty easy to survive in America now.
True.
So you don't really need the wealth. On the other hand, it's a sense of kind of... is it ego in a nice way, in a good way, that you feel good about yourself because you're accomplishing things and you're respected and you are doing these?
That plays into it. That is a huge factor, I think, ego, especially when you see other people and their success and, you know, running alongside them and believing that you should be just as good as they are and you should be just as successful. When your circumstances are different or, say, your calling, you know, I got to the point where it was not my season. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be thriving. It wouldn't be family thriving. It wouldn't be human thriving for me to continue that path. It would have actually been detrimental to my husband and to my children to continue that. And that was probably the toughest decision I made. I spent all weekend. It was a weekend I was supposed to go away to a conference. I had the plane tickets. I had the hotel rooms. I'd already spent the money. And I was going to go glamorous, go across stage, you know, be around people who are making millions of dollars and like interact with them. And I was excited. But then I had been struggling through some things with my faith and not like my faith wasn't struggling, but struggling with what I was doing. Is this matching the word of God? Is what I'm doing lining up with the word of God? I came to that decision that, you know what, I'm not going to go. And instead, my husband had already taken off work and he was going to stay home with the kids. I decided not to go. And we chose to do a family weekend instead. It was completely shifting priorities. I did not go. And it was something that I was really excited about. So it was hard. I cried a little bit. I listened to the conference online and it was a little hard. But we focused on our family. We did tons of fun activities with the kids and we just spent the whole weekend just us, you know. That was a turning point. Absolutely. It was a turning point for my marriage. It was a turning point for peace.
Well, you have such a short time with your kids.
Right.
You probably don't realize it yet.
But oh, I do.
I do. And
yeah.
When they grow up and then go out of the house, a lot of couples struggle then because they kind of lost their identity. They were raising the little ones and now they're gone and now we're just a couple again.
Right.
But it's also a great time to kind of rediscover what you could do with your life. Mm-hmm. Because now you are free.
Right. So that is so strange that you mentioned that. Literally what I was thinking on the way over here.
Yeah.
And that's what caused me to totally pass my driveway and have to turn around and go back and get our car to my husband and switch cars. But no, on the way over here, I was literally thinking that about how short the time is of raising our children, instilling the values that we want to be instilled in them, and spending those sweet memories and the, like building the memories and having that time with them. Because when they do grow up and they leave the house, I could pursue all of my passions, you know, like I could build a business. I could organize millions of events, you know, the things that make me happy that I love doing. You know, my husband and I could go on lots of trips and all of these things that we can do in about 10 to 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know? It's not that long.
It's not that long. It's a blink of an eye. And even though my kids are 8 and 4, I've already missed way too much time. You know, that was a huge turning point in my life to realize that. And also being able to lean on the Lord and for healing.
So what do you see yourself doing 10 years from now? It'd be more than 10 years.
It'd be more than 10 years.
It's so, 15 years.
Yeah. Corwin will be in 10 years. He'd be 18. Sawyer would just be 14. So
15 years.
But about, 15 years. Yeah. I have no idea. I'd like to see my house paid off in 15 years. I'd honestly like to build a new house. But as far as what I'm doing, I would like to see my husband and I working together on something ministry related or education related, like in some way that we could impart into someone else's life. I mean, not to say that it's, oh, we have so many good things to give people. People should listen to us, but it's not about that. But it's just, I strongly desire, it's that gifts of help. Like I love helping people and I want to take everything that I have learned, everything that I've been through, and I want to help others, you know, and I want people to love the Bible like I love the Bible. I want people to love God like I love God, and not that I love him well. Like, I don't. I feel like I fail at that all the time, but my passion and desire is to always love.
Do you and Ben work well together?
Yeah, actually, here's what we are learning. We're recently discovering that we make a pretty good team at planning events together.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is kind of a new thing for us. We are planning a pretty big game night, and so it's just in the beginning stages. Maybe it's more of an experiment, really, than anything. But I think it'll be fun for everyone. Ben loves strategy, and he loves games, and he loves entertainment, and he's really good at putting all that together. And so we're kind of taking that element and putting it together with, like, oh, you want to do an event? Let me plan it. You know, so the last few weeks, my kids have been able to go spend the night at my parents' place. And so Ben and I have been able to like go out to eat. And so I take my planner, and I'm old fashioned when it comes to a planner. I like paper. And so I've got like this planner out, and we're planning this event and writing down the games, the things that we need to do. We're kind of really excited about the fact that we can do that together. And that's kind of a new fun thing. So I think in 10 years, I would like to see that become something that's like God said, hey, this is what I have for you. You guys can work together in this element and serve others. And you bring joy to people's lives in planning events, but you can also bring an impact. And I would like to marry the idea of like having activities and education. I want people to come away from the experience having been deeply impacted for either their faith or information or their worldview through something that we've planned.
And do something interactive. So it's
yes, community just, building.
Not just hearing the word, but experiencing it more.
Yes. Yeah. That's one of Ben's passions, you know, that he's developing, or he's communicating to me now, that he wants to get more people together face to face doing something, you know, whether it's game nights or going to an event, like to a ball game or whatever. But yeah, and even in the Bible studies, like joining a study, it's just that across the table interaction, face to face. So
you've already planned your life far into the future now.
Oh, I have lots of plans but I don't know if they're the Lord's plans.
You're a lot like my daughter Gretchen, because Gretchen has lots of ideas too. She's actually this year is she was doing a homeschool kind of a co-op called Classical Conversations.
Oh, okay.
And now she decided to just write her own curriculum.
Fun.
So she's starting her own kind of personally crafted homeschool curriculum.
That's
thing.
That's amazing.
It is. But she is a very meticulous designer of things. She's very smart. She's very likable. So all of those characteristics that make education kind of easy.
Yeah, so, I can see her being very natural at that.
Yeah, so she's kind of doing that thing, and it's kind of amazing to watch. One of her classes wants to interview me about how I got started in life and in business and what I did and how you start a career and those kind of things. So I got 30 minutes to talk to them.
Next, hey, when we interview you, when it's your turn, can we...
On that particular thing.
Yeah, I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, I could tell you how that turned out, because I don't think it's what they expect. You know, when you're a kid, you're taught, you know, you're going to go through high school, you're going to go to college, you're going to learn a major, and you're going to do that thing.
Right.
And that's going to be your career in your life. And it never turns out that way. You know, you always fall into something.
That, yeah, circumstances and
location.
There's a lot of factors that makes you happy.
I heard people say, you know, you can have a different career after your main career. And I always thought that was stupid. Because if I have a career, why would I want a different one?
Right.
And what I found is I've probably had, maybe 10 different jobs.
Yeah.
Completely different areas.
Different areas.
I mean, I ran
a
museum for a while.
Right.
Who does that?
Right. I started out in land and title insurance. I was homeschooled from fifth grade on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I graduated from being homeschooled. Okay. I went to Camdenton until fourth grade, and then my mom, she worked in the kitchen at that school, and she wasn't going to renew her contract because my dad's construction business, he was so busy, and she was helping him with that. She couldn't go back to the kitchen, so she said she was not going to renew her contract, and I said, neither am I. In fourth grade. But at that time, we were attending a church where a lot of my friends were homeschooling, and my mom had been talking to the moms about homeschooling.
Oh, what church was that?
Foundation Fellowship.
Oh, you were one of them.
I was one of them. Teresa Keith was my homeschool mama.
Oh, Teresa Keith. Yeah, I can imagine.
Teresa,
she was inspiring.
Very inspiring. And so Bobby and I are still good friends. And we still talk, and our kids get together and play when she visits. And so, yeah, Teresa, I have amazing memories of the co-op and the things that she did. And so, yeah, I didn't go back to school. My mom started homeschooling me at fifth grade. So
and all the way through high school.
All the way through, yes. And then I did take my GED just to make things
most
easier.
Most homeschool moms are a little afraid of that, the later years.
Oh,
and I actually found we did that with Gretchen, and she basically taught herself.
That's what I did. That's what my mom said. Oh, you were easy. You just taught yourself.
At some point, you know, that age when homeschool parents think it's going to be the hardest because, well, what do I know about biology and physics and everything? is actually when kids are ready to learn themselves.
Learn, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I did. And we did decide to go ahead and just take my GED. A lot of homeschool moms wanted to fight that because they wanted the homeschool to be accredited enough, you know, mm-hmm. and recognized enough, right. you know, to get into college. And I really didn't care about the fight. I just wanted to have, you know, the documentation.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. But my parents, my dad built houses. He developed land subdivisions. And so I was always with them during their business transactions. I went to closings with them and I interacted, you know, with the real estate stuff. And so that's probably what struck my interest in business to begin with, is mm-hmm. my dad was always entrepreneur. You know, he wanted to work for himself so that he could go on vacation when he wanted to go on vacation and yeah. take off a month at a time, you know. And so that built inside of me. That's the life I wanted. I wanted to be independent. I wanted to be my own boss.
Mm-hmm.
But I had strong work ethic. You know, I have strong values, you know, for working well. So because of that, the person that my parents used for closings called me one day and said, "Hey, I want you to work for me during the summer, or, you know, when you're not doing your schoolwork." And that was my first job. Okay. So I started that career, got certified in title insurance, and I started that at 15. But then I decided I wanted to go into missions, and I, you know, love studying the Bible. And so I did an internship, and I traveled for a whole year. It was about a year and a half, actually. And then after that, I tried a career as, not really a career, it was just a job, but I worked at a fitness center. And so, yeah, I thought, oh, this will be fun. This is totally different. It's not at a desk or an office. Mm-hmm. Got kind of bored with that. And then I went back to the title insurance because I was called back to it. My old boss called me and said, "I want you to work for me again." But then I was called by the assessor and he wanted to be a mapper. And so because I had good experience with title mm-hmm. insurance and land. So then I got certified as a Missouri mapper and I was a cartographer for several years until I got married and had a baby. And then I work at a church now as a financial administrator. Now I do accounting. So
okay, so you already know about all the multiple careers.
Yes, like go through the careers.
Yeah.
And
I think it's very liberating compared to when I was a kid again, because it used to be you'd get a job and you'd work for the same company forever, and that was your life.
There are benefits to that, though.
Yeah, it sounds a little depressing.
Retirement, there's the consistent, yeah. you know, like if I would have continued with the
loyalty.
County. Yeah. You know, there, my old supervisor at the county, she had started working there right out of high school, and she was able to retire fairly young with a very good salary, you know, mm-hmm. with a good retirement income. And there's a lot of good to be said for that.
All right.
Security.
Okay. All right. I think we've learned everything about Deanna Walton.
Dun, dun, dun.
Until next time.
Yeah.
So this has been the Deanna Walton Show.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. And we'll see you next time.
Once again, we welcome listener comments about our topic and suggestions for future episodes. Email us at haven928@gmail.com. That's H-A-V as in Victor, EN928@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, go out and do good.